In 1959, four members of a Kansas family were murdered in their home, and the capture, conviction, and execution of their killers became the basis of Truman Capote's 1965 bestseller, In Cold Blood. Capote died in 1984 at the age of 59, never having completed another major work. Film critic David Edelstein says the new film suggests why.
Capote tells the story behind the story of the writing of In Cold Blood through the prism of Janet Malcolm's The Journalist and the Murderer, that brilliant book-length essay on the journalist's inevitable betrayal of his or her subject begins with the provocative and, I think, madly overheated assertion that, quote, every journalist who is not too stupid or too full of himself to notice what is going on knows what he does is morally indefensible. As directed by Bennett Miller and written by Dan Futterman, who cites Malcolm in interviews, the grim story of Truman Capote and his seminal nonfiction masterpiece becomes a tale of duplicity and self-loathing, of the loss of a writer's soul, and the beginning of the end of his artistry. The title character, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, is the droll dandy that many of us remember from Capote's TV appearances in the 60s and 70s. He's the oddball, homosexual southerner with a voice that suggests at once suckling and conniving, the voice of a baby mad scientist. A master manipulator, he speaks so slowly that people have to stop and hang on every self-consciously dazzling word. He has a cult in the boho salons of Manhattan and Brooklyn. But how will his act play in Kansas? That's where Capote heads in 1959, along with his doting friend, the novelist Harper Lee, played by Catherine Keener, when he reads of the inexplicable slaughter of an entire family, the Clutters, in their remote farmhouse. Capote cuts a bizarre figure in the American heartland, but he uses his celebrity and the power of his magazine, The New Yorker, to open both official doors and jail cells. It's in the latter that he develops a tender intimacy with one of the Clutters' killers, Perry Smith, played by Clifton Collins Jr.
We're going to be able to use your book for our case. You're right, we never got to raise an insanity plea. You wrote how terrible the lawyers was.
I haven't written a word yet.
What have you been doing?
Research. Talking to you.
All right.
I had hoped...
What are you calling it?
The book? I have no idea. Perry... If I'm going to write about you, if I'm going to determine how to write about you, we need to talk about, you know, why you're here. You know, the murders that night at the Clutter House.
Of course, Capote has started writing and has got his title. He just doesn't plan to finish In Cold Blood until Smith and his cohort, Richard Hickok, have been hung. That must be the book's big finale. And while Capote cares for Smith, maybe even adores him, he becomes desperate to see him executed so he can finish. Over the years it takes for the killers to exhaust their appeals, Capote's inner conflict between his empathy and opportunism eats him alive. The movie is slow, and gets slower as it crawls to the big scene of Capote extracting from Smith the story of the murders, presented here as a triumphant piece of vampirism. It's powerful and eerie, but I think something's missing. Capote in his work transcended that vampirism, and In Cold Blood fostered more understanding of why people kill than any book I know. I don't know how Futterman and Bennett could have conveyed the depth and humanity of Capote's writing on screen, but a film that ignores this alchemy of creation, that presents the book only in the context of Capote's celebrity and Janet Malcolm-esque exploitation, isn't telling the full story. The distorted mirror image that Capote told friends he saw in Smith is more talked about than dramatized, but the actors fill in much. As Smith, Collins finds the perfect mixture of neediness and cunning. And Hoffman, talk about alchemy. He's much bigger than Capote, but framed to look short. The first few minutes, you're aware of the nightclub impersonation aspect, but Hoffman reportedly listened to many tapes of Capote, and sometimes when gifted and porous actors faithfully duplicate the stammers and pauses of their subjects, the spirit enters into them. Hoffman lays bare this whiny, wheedling, self-absorbed little man, who nonetheless could see more deeply than almost anyone alive. If only the movie did more than hint at the genius behind what he saw.
David Edelstein is film critic for Slate.